great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we are proud to welcome Phil Chin, bass player for greats like Robbie Krieger and Jeff Beck's album Blow by Blow. Phil's brought his bass in studio and will be jamming with Rowan Robinson from Dio. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by our good friends at Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Hey, Scott, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing good. I've been keeping busy with more NAMM videos, as usual. So I think I'm up to like 32 or something now. It's insane.
That's great. I still got to put my pictures up that I took at the show. I apologize for not bringing them up. I've been pretty busy, but I will get those up there. I went after we shot the videos and shot some of the guitars in the woods from the acoustic guitar. So I'll be posting that up.
Well, some of the ones I got up posted up were a bass demo for Orange Amps on their new OB1K 1,000-watt bass amp and their new, dual tear 50-watt, 100-watt head. Stuff from 65 Amps, Kanalea Ukulele, and Fargin Amps, Celestion Speakers, a whole bunch of others that I put up. But I did want to announce for the folks that are listening, this is pretty big news. Next week, we are going to have PRS Guitars. And in studio, we'll have the guitarist from Quiet Riot, and then we'll have on the phone Paul Reed Smith himself.
Yeah, Alex.
Alex Grossi, the guitarist from Quiet Riot. So he'll be representing PRS Guitars. He'll be demoing the new Archon amp, and he'll have a PRS 24, or Custom 24. So it'll be really cool. So just definitely don't miss next week's show.
That should be fun. Okay, well, let's get started. I'm really excited tonight because as I was doing my research on Phil, he's just done so many different things, and the sessions that he's done is so varied. It's an amazing amount of work. But I want to start off first, before I introduce him straight off, I'm going to play a clip from an album that really changed my life musically. It was a big album at the time. You will hear, listen very carefully. There's a lot of instruments going on in here, including orchestra, but listen to the bass because he's doing some really interesting stuff. This is a segment from Scatterbrain with Jeff Beck. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome Phil Chin to the show. Phil, it's good to see you. Actually, you were here about a month or so ago when we had Rowan on, but welcome back. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Great to have you.
You changed my life. That album was just a major milestone. It changed my musical direction a lot. That was a very interesting album, but the bass playing, going through it again and doing the research for the show tonight and listening to some of the clips, it was really, you did some really tasteful, amazing things on that album.
Thank you very much.
Now, let's just get down to the brass tacks here. Let's talk a little bit about the session. You were using a P bass, which I think you had brought last time to Rowan's show, and you were using an Ampeg B15, the little Ampeg?
Yeah, the flip-top B15.
The flip-top.
Yeah.
Okay. And then pretty much then those, we were talking a little bit before the show, those sessions were pretty much you guys just kind of worked it out and just kind of jammed together to get the pattern. It wasn't written out.
No.
It still amazes me. I was talking to Rowan about this. It's like, that's pretty structured stuff for, you know, just playing.
Phil showed me the chart you played on Blow by Blow on Freeway Jam. And it's just like 16 bars. F, two bars. That's
like it. And what did it say? Oh, Stevie won the song tomorrow or something like that. Yeah.
Well, actually, since you're mentioning Freeway Jam, let me go ahead and play that cut. I did pull something from that. Again, these are just little segments that I pulled out to try to grab some of the magic that Phil was doing on the sessions. But there's just a lot more, especially on this album. This album has a lot of different stuff. Anyway, this is Freeway Jam. It's just clean. I mean, I play bass. I don't play as well as he does, but when I play bass, it's really hard to get it that clean, every little note that you're doing in there. It's just great. Now, let me ask you, do you play hard or are you pretty much a light touch on the bass?
Kind of medium-ish. But the thing is that when I have a great drummer like Richard Bailey, I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes when you practice hard. Mm-hmm. And then when you're with the right drummer, everything flows and it becomes easy. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to think, and it just, you know, it just flows easily with the right drummer because they have that same. See, Richard is from Trinidad and I'm from Jamaica, so we have the island thing going.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard was like 18 at that time or something, you know.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He's pretty young for that time.
Yeah, but, I mean, you could tell. I mean, when he started playing, the groove was just set. And with a groove like that, you get inspired.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that the Blow by Blow sessions, was that at Air Studios, George Martin Studio, or was that at Abbey Road?
No, it was at George Martin, Air Studio, upstairs.
Yeah.
I think it's Robinson or one of those. Marks and Sparks store. Mm-hmm. Was underneath by Oxford Circus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it was at that. You were telling me a little bit earlier, he basically just kind of let you guys play. Didn't really say too much?
No, he never. He always smoked his pipe and used to talk about Montserrat. His student Montserrat. Your student Montserrat. But I do want also to mention that we had rehearsed this with Carmine before, Carmine Appice. And we did a rehearsal with that. And then I don't know what transpired, but then we got Richard. And Richard just came in, you know, unrehearsed, and we just kind of did it, I think, in a week. I think it maybe been a week. We just go in there. And
now, when you rehearsed before, what did Jeff give you any direction, or did he just basically see what happens?
No, not really. He didn't really. He just kind of maybe give us a clue or whatever it is. But when you have the right musicians,
mm-hmm.
On the chemistry, things happen. And when Richard came on board, it was like really, I mean, like Freeway Jam was like a jam, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he sets it up. And then we did that She's a Woman reggae thing, and it was right up me and Richard's street, you know? Because, you know.
Yeah, no, and then You were using the P bass.
Yeah.
What kind of strings were you using? Because that's a pretty distinctive tone. I mean, that...
Well, I'm going to say...
I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of your hands, but I mean...
No, I'm going to say it, but I don't know if LaBelle is going to like it. They're the 52-110 heavy gauge LaBelle, as used by James Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
What is the 52 and the 110? And to get that fat sound, remember the P bass was made by... Mr. Leo Fender to get the sound of the upright bass, to simulate the upright bass. But it was much easier to carry around. So
mm-hmm.
the strings had that tone, 52 to 110, and it's like, it's very hard. It's very hard to play. You can't slap on them, you know. It's not a slapper string. It's more for like melodies, like James Jameson. And I had those on. Up to now, I think they're about 45 years. Uh-huh. I'm sorry.
Now, it was a more mellower string. It wasn't as bright like a Roto.
No, it was never bright. It could mm-hmm. never be bright because it, you know, it had that deep, fat, rich tone. And the older they were, the better the sound. So I never changed mine.
No, I've heard that from other bass players when they were using those. They kept them on for years.
Oh, I still have mine on for years. Uh-huh. I think it's going 4 to 6 this year. I'm not sure. Wow. I didn't count.
And they don't lose intonation?
Nothing.
Because I know with guitar strings, you probably, when they get too old, they're hard to keep in tune and stuff. They kind of mess up.
Yeah, well, because guitar strings have more treble effect on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, then you also worked, and I presume, I also, too, you worked with Rod Stewart, and there's three albums that I read that you had done, Footloose and Fancy Free, Blondes Are Have More Fun, and Foolish Behavior. You did the song, the pretty famous one, Do You Think I'm Sexy? Can you tell us a little bit behind the scenes about that? There was how that came about.
Oh, well, I was watching the TV one night, and I saw a Lone Ranger. Lone Ranger and Tonto, right? So, and this song keep on coming on. Where does Lone Ranger take his garbage, right? To the dump, to the dump, to the dump, to the dump. So I said, that was it. So I kind of got that idea, and so that is where I kind of got that's where the bass line, came from. But we had recorded that like 3 times because we did it like in a Barry White. And we did another way, and then the third time it wasn't really happening. So I felt really frustrated. So I tell them I was going to I gave them a list of bass players. I said, well, maybe somebody else could do it better than me because it wasn't happening. And they wanted me to play upside down, but I couldn't feel it. Mm-hmm. And then I had this CR-78 drum machine that was in the studio. We used to live in the studio, recording. So I pressed samba and rock. And on come a beat, I don't remember. It's kind of something like that, And then Andy Johns came and said, that's the beat, let's put it in the headphones. And then we played actually to that drum machine. And that's where we got that's where the groove started. And the groove happened. And then Carmine overdubbed on it. And the rest is history.
Okay. So you basically, after that groove was there, Rod put the lyrics and it was.
Well,
like,
yeah, he kind of sang to it. And then, after that, once you have the basic, then he could put all the icing on the cake.
So. Now, with Rod, was it similar to like Jeff Beck, where they would basically, you would work out a groove and build from there, or were the songs more structured? Did they tell you, okay, basically, I want you to do this? Maybe not necessarily wrote out all the parts, but you know what I mean? Was it more structured? Because they sound like, I don't know if they clicked it, but the synchronization sounds like it, because it sounds like it was overdubbed.
Well, with Rod was very good in great hook lines, and he also had a good sense of pop. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm great at. I kind of know where it's going to go when the bridge and the verses. Don't tell me, but because I was like, when we were doing Sexy, I was kind of making all kind of mistakes. And then I said, Rod, I don't feel it, And then I think he listened and then he came the way I was feeling, because it's just, having done so many pop sessions with Mickey Most and all those people, it becomes natural.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, too, you co-wrote a song with him. I'm going to play that one, which was kind of an interesting, this is the opening, I think, of the song. But again, what I want everybody to listen to is how the groove is pretty locked. It's a really tight. You got it in the pocket, but it's pretty solid. But this is called You're Insane. So here we go. Now, how did you get that groove? I mean, that is some of the most solid in the pocket bass. I mean, you're just locked with that drum right there. And you cut. The thing I like about it is I can hear that bass. It's coming out. It's in the open. I think that's your playing. I don't think they had an EQ or boost you. I think you're punching.
When you work with Andy Johns, he always takes 2, maybe 3 minutes to get a bass song. He was just a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll swear at you and tell me to get out the studio, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the guy that was really responsible. And I always play my bass, everything out.
Opened up.
Yeah, everything opened up. So, but Andy was the one that really got that, you know,
now,
that great sound.
Now, that session, you were using the jazz bass, which you have here tonight.
Yeah.
This is the bass that he used for that session.
Yeah.
Yeah, but actually, that's a very unusual bass because I'm pretty sure that Les Paul has only endorsed Gibson, but for some reason, looks like you have a jazz bass endorsed by Les Paul there.
You know, you're right. You're correct. And not only that, he crossed out Fender.
Yeah.
And I have a picture of him doing it also to make sure it's authentic.
Did he ask when he was crossing out Fender, or did he just do it just to be an honoree?
I guess he knew he was a good friend, but he was sad, maybe, so, you know, make it special.
For our audience, so you know, he signed the bass, and a lot of the bass that you brought in last time with that you used on the Blow by Blow had signatures all over it. But anyway, on the top of the headstock, it's signed Les Paul, and then the Fender logo, there's two lines crossing it out. So that's what we're talking about right now. It's pretty funny. Now, you were using this bass on the Rod Stewart sessions. Were you using the B-15 or were you using a different amp for that?
I think B-15.
Still using the B-15. Now, what did you use for Rod when you toured with him? The jazz?
About 8 basses.
Oh, wow.
We had the jazz. I think I had 3 jazz bass. I had a music man.
Mm.
And I think the rest were P basses. Because you always have to have backup. Not only that, but it kind of looked good on stage.
Yeah.
You know, and we had like 30 guitars.
Yeah. But also, what amps did you use?
Oh, the SVT.
SVT.
With a whole, we had, I think, maybe about 12 SVT. You know.
Oh, wow.
One on one side and the other. And the guitarist used everybody. This was like a whole wall
and
of
And you're
SVT.
Using the 8x10 cabinets, right?
Yeah.
That. Now, was there that much of a difference adapting to using such a big amp like that as opposed to the B-15? Because the B-15 is kind of a warm, kind of a nice, mellow sound. And then those amps are pretty... They're pretty loud and pretty ballsy.
Yeah, but you see, when you're in front of the audience and you're like 60,000 people and you're looking at the girl, you don't worry about the tone. No, really. It's just a totally different thing because in the studio, it's all small. So you concentrate more on tone. But we always had Andy Johns and Tom Dowd was the producer. So, you know, that section, I wish I'd taken a picture of the EQ.
Mm-hmm.
But that was always taken care of by mm-hmm. Andy and Tom. And then on the road, we just used the SVT, a whole line of SVT.
Mm-hmm. Now, you always used an amp with them. You didn't go direct at any time, or did they run it direct too at the same time?
I think they run direct also.
Okay.
I know with the Blow by Blow, they will run direct. If you listen to it, you can hear the direct.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting that you had a music man. What did you use the music man for live?
I can't quite remember, but
what did you like about the Music Man? Because it has a different sound than the Fender.
I like the Music Man because it had that attack and that that kind of slapping
mm-hmm.
sound. Although I'm not a slapper, but it had that clear tone. You know, it's very bright. And it has the body also. So it was like, it's just like the Bernard Edwards kind of thing, you know? So I can't quite remember which song I used it on, but...
Okay.
Yeah, it just depends.
Phil, I was looking at your bass, actually. Does it look like you changed the bridge on that, or is that different pickups? Because you have some holes in there. Do you know what modification was done there?
Nothing.
You mean the ones on the side?
Yeah, that's for the cover.
That's for the cover.
Oh, well, there you go.
This is actually one of
the... This is original, then.
Yeah, the old basses had the cover.
And this is for the felt.
Oh, okay.
The mute. You had a mute for them.
Yeah, the mute felt.
That's how old the bass is. It's the old style Fender.
$325. Who's the name of the guy? Leon Gear, I think.
That's
Leon, where are you? Thank you very much.
Oh, that's a beautiful guitar. And then the neck is just really...
Yeah,
it's
and
really
it's, I've done nothing to it. And it's the stat knob.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I changed the pleck guard. But I do have the original pleck guard. And the reason for this was because when I'm on stage, I was trying, you know, Rod used to kick football out into the audience and it would go right to the back. So I couldn't figure out how can I get to the back without leaving the stage so the light would reflect on this.
Oh, that's cool.
So
yeah, it's kind of the pickguard's kind of like a mirror.
Yeah,
type mirror pickguard. What was the original finish on that? Because it's kind of worn down, but what is that?
It was natural. I think that they took it off, whatever it is. So I gave it to the road. I said, "Get read fire engine red."
Oh, they painted. Okay, yeah. It was painted after.
So I got it done. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was that's a killer bass. That's really nice.
It plays great. And, you know, you can feel it. I've done nothing to it really.
Now you use. We were talking about this a little earlier too. You have about you consider yourself using a medium touch. You don't really play hard or really play light. Because there's some guys that play really light and fast. And then there's guys that dig in really.
Well, off late I've been kind of digging in because I've been using this MXR Octavider too, you know?
Go ahead and show it to us.
Yeah, so. You know, so.
Our voice lines that just really cuts, but that's nice.
Yeah,
it has a growl to it.
Yeah, well, because I'm using the MXR bass octave, and it gives me, you know, it gives me something different.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were touring, did you use any effects, or were you pretty much just straight out?
Straight, nothing. I think in those days they didn't have effects, did they? Ron, did they have?
Yeah, of course they did.
Well, I think about that. The most common thing was the phase shifter at that time. I don't think the pedal flanger had come out yet.
Oh,
but.
Right. Oh yeah, but that I think they have more effects for guitars, really.
I wasn't there.
I wasn't there.
I think Hendrix, he had effects.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I did use one on, I did use that Boss Chorus, you know, the...
Mm-hmm, the chorus.
On passion, you know? I got it. That I got from Alphonse Johnson. Where the report album. I think it missed your shoulders. I said, Alphonse, I ripped you off. He said, no, you got it from somebody. So everybody's former playgroup, either from Bach or somebody. I don't know who it is, Django Reinhardt or somebody. But, you know, when I heard it, I said, yeah. And then, you know, I just kind of fitted it in. Mm-hmm. However, you know, mm-hmm. And this part. That is from James Jameson, Hang On In There with Johnny Bristol. It's the same bass line.
Right.
You know, so it's just all the bass line that I hear, I like and I play them and then I get them to fit whatever I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Was that Michael Henderson you said? Ding a ding a ding
a do do do. Oh, Michael Henderson. Oh, that one was I saw that was from Jack Johnson with Miles Davis, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And the that tent was actually from Chuck Rainey. Because in London they used to call him a Chinese Chuck, but I used to play all the tent. And I think Chuck got them from Oscar Peterson because his long mm-hmm. hands, mm-hmm. yeah. And then the riff, the shuffle riff, I kind of got it from Michael Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of copied him, but I haven't got great ears, so I made it mine.
Yeah, I have some clips from you played with Eddie Van Halen and Brian May on the Starfleet project, where you do the tenths.
Good, yeah.
Let me play one of the clips for you. It's called Blues Breaker, and listen in the background, you'll hear him play. He'll do these really cool little riffs in the background. Here's Blues Breaker. Yeah.
Okay, that was a pretty interesting. I mean, again, it just cuts right through, and that's a pretty dense bunch of guitars going on there. Tell us a little bit about that session.
Oh, well, I think Brian's son was into the, I think it's the movie or something.
Yeah, it was a TV show, Starfleet.
And then I think Brian wanted to do something for his son. So he was here and he said, well, he called me and he said, well, he wanted something. And he wanted to do it with Eddie Van Halen. I said, sure. And Alan Gratcher. And I think Freddie Mandel was on keyboard. So we kind of went, he had an idea what it was going to be. So we went into Record Plant again. And there I was helping Eddie with his Marshall. and we just kind of cut it. You know, it took 2 days. I think we cut it and then went back the next day to see if there's any fixing to be done.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
That was it, really.
Now, we are going to go ahead and we'll stop right now we'll go to a commercial break. And when I come back, I'm going to play another cut from that. Again, there's some interesting phrasing that Phil's doing on it. It's called Let Me Out. But we'll take a break. And when we get back, I'll come back with this cut. And then we'll talk to him more about the Starfleet project. Here we go. And
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. Number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
Now, that was first, I think, Brian playing, and then Eddie came in at the end. But you can hear, especially when Eddie was coming in, you did the tenths, and then you did those little thirds. That's pretty hip. That's pretty cool stuff.
All chuckery.
So that was so it only took like a couple of days, and that was pretty straightforward. It was really tight. I mean, that's pretty amazing. I mean, you guys are playing all the time, so it's really tight stuff. But it's just interesting what you were putting in there, what you were throwing in there.
Well, I listen to Chuck Greene and all Aretha's stuff. I need the seventh, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you know. It's the 10th. I just love Chuck's playing, which was really completely different from Jameson, because Chuck was more, in my opinion, more a riffy person, while Jameson was all over the place on a bebop with the labella string. So it's like completely different, but I could feel them, you know?
Can you give me an example of what you're talking about with Jameson so you can kind of, so the audience kind of gets an idea of what you're talking about in the styles?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So that's the Jamerson
style.
Yeah,
he's all over. Like, for instance, he's feed between, like, he's playing it on the 7th for the F. To the E flat, to the A flat, to the G, what he would do. To the A flat, to the G, he play He's play. I mean, who would do that? He's going in from the F to the F sharp to the G, passing the G to the, then going back to the F sharp to the G. So that he was bebop. You know, where Chuck was, Chuck was more like a riff, you know, yeah. Riff, but really brilliant. Two different styles of playing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have Gerald Jamerton on a monster.
Do you guys want to try something just to kind of give us an idea of like a little groove thing to let you see what you, just go for it. And Rowan's playing guitar on here. All right, go ahead and just...
One.
Okay.
Eh?
Okay.
G, with the freeway.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. One, two.
No, that's a good that it's interesting because you can hear the parts. I mean, after all the on the album, there's so much stuff going on. But no, that's in that song's still a classic. But let me ask you, let me play another clip just to kind of give some of the breadth of the album blow up, because you guys are doing a lot of different styles. And at that time, you have to remember the audience out there, it was pretty new. I mean, that album was a pretty seminal album for fusion, and there was a lot of stuff happening at that time, and this was kind of new to a lot of people's ears. Here's a song called You Know What I Mean, and this is it's a little different style, but more of that kind of jazzy stuff or funk.
Very superstitious that the keyboard there or the organ.
Clavinet.
Yeah, the clavinet. Yeah, well, clavinet.
Yeah, either way. But, yeah.
But who was the keyboards? Was that Max Middleton?
Max Middleton. What happened? Max was one of these guys. He's like a genius, you know. And we used to also do sessions with, it was Richard, Max, myself, and we had a guitarist called Crackle. And yeah, that's another. So his amp used to crackle, so call him Crackle. Robert Owai, another great guitarist. So we used to do, that's the core, we used to do like Linda Lewis sessions and all the things. So we kind of, you know, so we kind of knew each other. I mean, knew each other playing. But Max was the great keyboard. And I think he wrote quite a few of the songs with Jeff also. Brilliant, brilliant keyboard player.
Yeah, great sound. His sound on the Rhodes. And I mean,
oh, your Rhodes, the stereo Rhodes.
Yeah, going back and forth.
Brilliant.
The, now, I noticed when you were playing, when you guys were jamming together, rolling into yourself, you're using a pick. Were you using a pick? I presume you weren't always using a pick, that you use fingers. What were you using on the Jeff Beck session? Were you picking it? Or
I just bought this pick last week.
Oh, okay. But you didn't use, what about on the Rod Stewart or any of those? Did you ever use a pick live or did you ever? Or,
No.
It's all fingers.
It's all fingers. I only used like a pick on like with the Doors, LA Woman, because I need to get that aggression. Songs that with that requires a pick.
Oh, okay.
Because to get that kind of aggression, you know, it's
just, yeah, you know, I mean, I've used a pick on sessions myself, but I mean, it does cut if you want a certain sound. I mean, it was a big deal in the 60s. I mean, almost all the stuff like the Beach Boys, like the Wrecking Crew, they used a lot of pick on that.
Oh, karaoke,
to get that.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk. I want to play another clip, which, I mean, again, I'm trying to, there's so much stuff that you've worked on, and I'm just grabbing a little snippet of what you actually, the work that you've done, because you've just done a lot of amazing stuff. I want to play a clip from Jackson Browne, which is an interesting clip. This is Till I Go Down, and this is from his album Lives in the Balance, and it's kind of, it has an interesting feel, and you can tell me about this session after we play it. Here it is, Till I Go Down. Now tell me about that one. That's an interesting, that's different for Jackson Browne, but it's kind of cool.
All the way from Kingston, Jamaica.
Yeah.
No, that's the type of music I grew up with, you know. And of course it's reggae. And it's a different, you don't play on the one. The bass always plays off beat. The drum play on the two and the four, and the guitar always kind of the, keep the constant and the height, the hi-hat and the thing. But the bass wanders all the time.
Right.
So that is, that's what I grew up. That's the groove that I have, the feel.
Now the reggae, when you play reggae, you're laying back from the beat, right? It's much looser.
Yeah.
Now, and a lot of the rock stuff, like, for example, Scatterbrained or something like that, you're kind of on the beat or pushing the beat?
Well, I don't know. When I'm with Richard, I'm just play on the beat.
You're playing on the beat?
Yeah. It's like, you know, like, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of just on the beat. So.
But it's interesting because that feel to lay back behind the beat, you either have it or you don't. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people can play really tight, really just synchronized, they're like a metronome, but you try to get them to lay off of it. And
put it this way, you can't get it out of a book.
Yes.
Hey, let me show you a quick thing. Ron, A minor, A minor to G, right? To reggae. Two, three,
four,
G minor. It's you know, off the beat. I don't know. It's just something.
You're playing around with it a little bit, and you know, everybody knows where one is, but you're kind of just laying back. It's jazz does that a little too. A lot of times when you swing, you're off the beat. Uh-huh. You're not necessarily pushing it. Mm. You know, and some of the stuff like in, I notice sometimes in prog rock they push it. They push the beat. They're ahead of the beat as opposed to behind the beat.
You know, like when we did She's a Woman, right? First of all, at that time in Jamaica, they had a song called Papa Top,
mm-hmm.
right? And I kind of like that, Papa mm-hmm. Top. So I made the bass doing the Papa Top, right? Kind of, I forget the bridge, but that's the idea.
Right. No, I get what you're saying, and it's an interesting feel. Now you played also too with Bob Marley.
Yeah, I did a show. He was on the show with Johnny Nash, Jackie Edwards also. I played guitar, I think, with bass with Bob Marley, Jackie Edwards. I played bass. Jimmy mm-hmm. Clifford played guitar, and Jimmy James, I played guitar.
Did you ever play upright too? Because I know a lot of bass players now are trying to do the upright thing too, or fretless. Did you ever use fretless?
Yeah, I used fretless on one of the a song by this girl called I forgot the name of it, but Chantal Barry, To Love mm-hmm. Someone, and mm-hmm. it was really like, you know, it was like my concept of Jaco and Pino, you know, we do the kind of harmony. You know, and just
he's
my
hitting,
idea
yeah,
of Pino.
Just so everybody knows, he's hitting the harmonic on the fretless. You can hit the harmonic and slide down, and actually the harmonic will slide. It's hard to do it on the bass he has there because the frets kind of knock it out, but it's. I know what you're saying with Jaco. That was he used to do that a lot.
When Jaco came out, I threw away my fretless bass. No, I gave it away. said, no way. you know, while everybody was taking out the frets and tying up the head like mm-hmm. Jaco, but I mean, mm-hmm. Jaco was a monster for that.
Now, so when you first started getting into rock, did you first go to London or were you in L.A.? Because you've been playing a lot here. I mean, a lot of the sessions, like the Rod Stewart, were done out here.
Yeah.
I know the Jeff Beck, the Blow by Blow, was done in England. Yeah. But where were you based? Did you move to London into that scene?
In 1964, I went to London. And I was playing guitar with this band called The Vagabonds.
Oh, okay.
And my cousin was the bass player, so I was the guitarist. That's where we record this stuff in Abbey Road. And I think John and Paul was around here, you know, at that time. Mm-hmm. They told me, but I didn't know who John and Paul was, you know. So when they're playing ska music, and what happened, the manager who was managing the High Numbers was taken over by Kit Lambert, and Kit Lambert was, and the High Numbers were the Who. Mm-hmm. He loved us, but he said, you have to change that style of music from ska to soul music. So we had a thing called Rock and Soul. Mm-hmm. We do all the Benny King and the Stand By Me and the Knock on Wood and all that stuff. And then we ended up supporting the Who at the Marquee. That's how I got to know Pete and, you know, Pete and Mooney and all those people. We used to see them all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. But we supported them. So,
what was the, at that time, was, because I don't remember, you know, we heard stuff coming in from, you know, radio here and stuff. When I was exposed more to reggae, it was later, more when Bob Marley, you know, became famous. But was that a big thing, reggae and ska, was that a big thing in Britain that early at that time?
Yeah, well, the first one was in 1963, was Millie Small, My Boy Lollipop. And it was arranged by my great friend Ernest Ranglin, the number one jazz guitar in the world for me. Wes Montgomery was his big fan. And after that, yeah, Desmond Dekker, 007 Shantytown, Poor Me Israelite was a big hit. Mm-hmm. And then after that, Poor Me Israelite, and then Jimmy Cliff came after that. But what happened, you remember, we were under British rule, so the Jamaicans could go to England without the, you know, with the British passport, and they work as they work either as nurses or a clippy. You know what a clippy is? A clippy is the one on the bus, and they clip the thing. So they went there and they took the music with them, the ska music on the big song system. You know, that type of music was exposed to the white, the English guy. Hence you got like UB40 and the Specials and all those things. Mm-hmm. So the Jamaican took their culture with them, which was the, you know, the music and the ackee and saltfish and the food and everything. So, because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. we were British, and it was a great time for the great melting pot.
Yeah, I remember England was, they were just mixing styles. I mean, of course, the Beatles with the music from India and stuff like that, they were getting into a lot of that. But, I mean, I remember when Sting came out and he did a reggae type of tune, and that was, it hit the, you know, our radio waves here. But, I mean, we didn't really know that much about that at that time. We were absorbing a lot of stuff from England here, the British invasion, but it wasn't until later that we got more of those different styles, though there were people around, especially back east and around Florida, that were real into the music.
Well, you know, Obla D is like, you know, like a ska song. And even like that Led Zeppelin, Dire Maker, that I think, John Paul, I don't know, where it is, Robert Plant went to Jamaica and he kind of wrote a song like that. And it's kind of like a...
Yeah. And that was like 68, 69 when that came out. That was on the second or third album of Zeppelin. So yeah.
Great track. And then you had Dreadlock Holiday. Who was that again? 10cc. Mm-hmm. Dreadlock Holiday. And then they had another one. I'm going to Barbados, whatever it is. So the that Jamaican music had now caught on, you know, and of course also the Tamla Motown stuff was there. That's why Phil Collins and Paul Young and all, they love Rod Stewart, love all that type of stuff. So it was a big melting pot of all different kind of the five stair-step, Bobby Blue Bland, Otis Redding, Marvin Gaye, everything. A big melting pot for music.
We're out of time already, I haven't even caught.
Shoot.
I didn't even touch. I just wanted to mention that you've been recently playing with Robbie Krieger.
Yeah.
And you're still gigging. You guys, are you any gigs coming up that we should know about?
Well, we usually do this one at Moore Park for the St. Jude's thing, St. Jude's benefit. So we've been doing it for like I think this is probably the 6th year, and we had special guests like Gene Simmons, Johnny Lang, Tommy Taylor.
When is it?
I'm not sure. I think it's probably in September, October, something
okay.
like that. Okay. Yeah.
And then also, too, check Phil Chen on Facebook, and you'll be announcing the dates on there. But I want to thank you. It's just a really honor to have you on the show. Your breadth of work is just astounding.
Thank you. I also want to mention that last Saturday, I was at Lucy's 51, and we had Brian Tichy on drums. He's like, I mean, I know what a great drummer is because I grew up listening to Keith Moon and Bonzo, because we opened for Bonzo with New Barbarians.
Yes.
And then we had also Ron.
Yes.
So, and we had like a powerhouse there. And so last Saturday was great doing that thing. And that was where I was able to use a pick and kind of show off with my kind of solo. Oof, what is it?
For a guy that plays with fingers, he sure knows how to use a pick. You can tell he's a guitar player.
Yeah, that's where I started. I made my first guitar.
And Rowan, I want to thank you for coming down and just coming in and playing guitar impromptu. It was really great.
Thank you guys.
Want to play something out to take us out?
And just remind everyone real quick while they're figuring out what they're going to play. Next week is Paul Reed Smith Guitars with Paul Reed Smith and Alex Grossi from Quiet Riot. Tune in for that, and that will be a great show.
Okay, Dire Maker.
Okay.
Here we go. Thank you, everybody. Have a good night, and we'll leave you with Phil and Rowan playing. Here we go.
1, 2, 3, 4.